This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Welcome back into the Lions 24-7 podcast. I am Tyler Donahue. He is Sean Fitz. It's been a few days since we brought you a breakdown of the 2022 Penn State recruiting class. If you missed our last episode, coming to you on signing day night, go check that one out. Pretty long episode detailing position by position. We'll have a lot more to say about this class before several members enroll in January, but we already got to keep our focus on the 2023 group that just got a little bit bigger on a Monday morning as we were set to sit down and record. We pushed things back a little bit because we hate being in the middle of a recording session when a commitment drops, so we planned ahead. Sean Fitz, your reporting helped us do that, and Joshua Miller, who I know you were close to putting a crystal ball in a while back, that happened today, and then a commitment came swiftly afterward.
We were talking about a crystal ball for Josh Miller back in, I think, September or October, because he had set the stage for a potential decision. Penn State has always been in the mix. Clemson was in the mix. North Carolina, I think Virginia Tech and Tennessee were his other two. But I think this is a situation where he kind of tapped the brakes, and rightfully so. He's a 2023 prospect. Tapped the brakes with the James Franklin rumors with USC, LSU, whoever else was in the mix at that point. I've kind of blocked that from my head. But slowed things down, probably, as he should have as a 2022 prospect, but always really liked Penn State. We thought he was going to commit to Penn State on November 2nd, which is the anniversary of his late father's birthday. Father passed away a couple of years ago. And you know, he decided to release that top five instead, wanted to take visits in the spring, but decided that this was the time for him to get it done. I think once there was a little bit more clarity on Penn State's coaching situation, the stability there with the 10-year contract and things like that, Miller was able to hop on, or ready to hop on board, and was able to do so. Called up Penn State. They were happy to take his commitment. Now Penn State's got probably two or three offensive linemen in this class, depending on where you slot Mega Barnwell, who's tight end slash offensive lineman, because he's still got some development to do ahead of him.
Miller listed 6'5", 320 pounds, number 412 overall in the composite rankings, which list him as the number 28 interior offensive lineman in the class. 24/7 Sports itself has him at number 30 among all interior offensive linemen, a number 8 player in Virginia, and of course Penn State has the number 1 interior offensive lineman in our evaluation at 24/7 Sports, and Alex Birchmeyer, who committed back during a really busy summer for Penn State. That was a big win for them in the 2023 cycle. And Miller had a lot of familiarity, and fortunately, that's something we'll be talking about a lot with the 2023 recruiting class. These guys have actually gone to campuses, gone to games, gone to camps. Fortunately, that will remain the case. This will be more of a cycle that gets us back to some semblance of normalcy, especially as they're upperclassmen. And that was big in this particular case because Miller, although he's down there in Virginia, consistently making the trip up to Happy Valley, getting comfortable with campus, and clearly comfortable enough to make this decision halfway through his junior year of high school.
He's had a relationship with Alex Birchmeyer for a long time. Birchmeyer actually, wanted him to come up for the whiteout game. Unfortunately, Life Christian had a cancellation on their schedule, had to bump it back a day. He was not able to get to the whiteout game. But I'll say this about Josh Miller. He went to the Illinois game, and he committed to Penn State. I mean, that's saying something, because I know that that was not for the faint of heart there. Came back for the Michigan game, the stripe out game. He wanted to take in a big atmosphere at Penn State. Also went to games at Clemson and at North Carolina this fall. But, as long as we've been reading this one, it seemed like Penn State has been the team that's always been up there for him. He came to camp last summer with the big man challenge with Life Christian, and has been back twice since. So that says something. Popped in his tape this morning. Pleasantly surprised, better than I remember, because I don't think I watched his full senior tape. I maybe watched some early stuff or something like that. This is a guy at 6'4 plus, probably close to 330. We list him at 320. I expected him to be barreling guys over and falling on top of people, basically. It is something we've seen a lot of offensive line prospects do in the past, but Really pleasantly surprised. Light feet for that size. Was able to lock onto people and get people moving. And I honestly think he's got a lot of his best football ahead of him. Life Christian has a ton of talent. They don't have a ton of success. So I'm wondering, you know, what his coaching is like at that level and how much he can benefit at the next level from a college weight program, coach, things like that. So Penn State really likes him. I am, like I said, pleasantly surprised when I popped that tape in today because I wasn't sure what to expect. So, you know, you've got another interior prospect. I know people are going to gripe about no true tackles, but for Birchmeyer and Miller, two of their top guys on the board in the interior in the 2023 class, it's a really good start for a group that should continue to add offensive linemen.
And we're talking about since Phil Troutwine arrived, that initial recruiting class, the 21 class, you get one scholarship guy out of it by the end of the first year with Landon Tengwall, all that's remaining. You sign some players, but as you pointed out, Sean, in the 2022 cycle, still feels like an area where that was not maximized. And a very good group overall, offensive line, there's some meat on the bone that was left in terms of what you want to do from a personnel standpoint. It feels like it's going to force Penn State's hand to really be aggressive in the transfer portal, which you should be anyways, but particularly at that tackle position. Phil Troutwine under a lot of heat here. You mentioned maybe Barnwell ending up as an offensive lineman, but at the very least here, a couple of Virginia's top offensive linemen, including their top-ranked overall prospect in Birchmeyer. What do you make of this start for the offensive line class? Because it feels like just about anything Troutwine is doing right now on the field, off the field, recruiting trail, people are going to be paying close attention to everything.
No, I mean, people are going to criticize his offensive line this year, rightfully so. But yeah, that's it's one of those ones where you look at his past couple of cycles, especially last cycle, is, you know, Penn State seemed to start out really high on people's lists, but eventually would fall off. And you know, you end up, no disrespect to the guys that signed, but you end up with the guys outside of Drew Shelton that, you know, have some development ahead and you have question marks about. So starting off with Birchmeyer, huge. We'll put Barnwell in a different category for now, but they really like Josh Miller, and there's some, you know, there's a good bit of tackles on the board. Samson Okunlola, whose brother just signed at Pitt last week, Chase Basantis, which they're going to have to do some work. Luke Montgomery, Javen Williams is the guy to look to here from Wyomissing, is a guy that Penn State's put a lot of work into in terms of you know, and just being there. But you look at the board and it's one thing to have a bunch of names on there. It's another thing to have a bunch of names on there, but also have guys in the boat. And that's what they didn't have last year for the most part. I look at Evan Link from Gonzaga down at in Washington, D.C. That's a guy I really like. And that's a guy that we probably don't talk enough about in terms of he's been to campus, he's been to big games and things like that, and he's going to continue to pick up offers and things like that. So we'll see how they can close on guys like that. But there's a difference between the way that this, you know, this cycle went and the past cycle, because they have guys in the boat right now.
So those three players from Virginia, including Barnwell, and then you got a pair here from Pennsylvania, Lamont Payne, a defensive back, and Joey Schaeffler, a big tight end prospect. And so those are your five. And right now, Sean, only a couple programs, Notre Dame and Georgia, carry more commits in the 2023 cycle than does Penn State. Early on for the rankings, but we're always looking at these rankings. Number three in the nation right now for the 2023 cycle. Volume have something to do with that, but they also have three guys considered four-star prospects, or I should say a five-star prospect in Alex Birchmeyer when you look at the composite. So, you know, the goal here is try to pile on one set top 10 recruiting class with another. Long way to go, but pick up number five of that cycle so far, and it feels like a major opportunity here this offseason, because you're going to have these winter visits, you're going to have some of these junior days, things that have been wiped off the face of the earth with the pandemic during recent recruiting cycles. Fingers crossed they're back in play right now, and Penn State's going to be able to rely on a little bit of peer recruiting when these guys get together on campus, because this is starting to be a bit of a sizable group where it's not just one, two, three guys standing around your facilities. Starts to be a bit of a huddle, and that can start influencing visitors who are maybe a little unsure of the campus and a little unsure of the staff. These are the kind of guys, when you have commits on board and you have them on campus, they can kind of ease that, melt through some of that, and make guys feel a lot more comfortable about moving forward with Penn State.
Yeah, and I think they've already done that with Birchmeyer, and now Miller is going to be vocal. He's going to be one of those guys that's tweeting at everybody. Lamont Payne's doing the same thing. You know, that's just the way it is in the 2023 cycle is all these guys are connected, even though a lot of them haven't met each other. So we'll see how that continues to progress. But yeah, I think it's a solid start there, and you want to continue to build on that certain positions. I think offensive line, you know, as we talked about with at signing day last week, you're going to have to do a mix of high school kids and the portal. But given the way that you brought in one guy that's still with the program, as you mentioned, in Landon Tengwall two cycles ago, and then this past cycle, two high school guys in Drew Shelton and Malik McNeil, you lost Andre Roy at the end. You're going to have to lean on the portal. And I think at some point you're going to have a class like you had in the 2020 cycle where they brought in five guys. So, or 2019 cycle, I think it was, where they brought in five or six guys up front. Buddy, with the pandemic, I just can't keep up with the number of guys in each class. So I'll have to go back and get that in front of me. But
you're talking offensive line. I think you're thinking 2020 with Nick Dawkins and Golden Achiumba.
That was 2020, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Seems much longer ago.
Jimmy Crest and so on and so forth. Yeah.
So yeah, you got to go bulk at some point, I think. And that's where they, you know, you allocate certain numbers for certain positions at times. And I think you've come up short and you've done what you can in terms of patching with transfers. But you have to develop those guys at some point. And we'll see what that room looks like at the end of the spring. But that's a direction I think you can go in this class.
Of course, we'll have a lot to talk about with the 2023 cycle and the months and weeks and years ahead when it comes to Penn State football. For now, we're going to circle back to the 2022 class, and one of the marquee members of that group was Nick Singleton, the running back here in the state of Pennsylvania. Coveted commodity across the national recruiting trail, a big win for Penn State, fighting off some other Power 5 programs, Notre Dame, Alabama, among those involved in this pursuit. Singleton putting pen to paper on Wednesday. About 24 hours before that, we were lucky enough to get him on for a call right after he was named the Gatorade National Player of the Year. He got those honors presented to him by Saquon Barkley. It was a surprise, virtual surprise at his school with Saquon Barkley, the former Penn State running back, chiming in and saying, "Hey, guess what? You're the National Player of the Year." Really cool moment. We caught up with him right afterward. This was not something that we set up as a podcast interview, but we're sharing it with you. Here is the conversation with Nick Singleton, who will be on campus and joining these Nittany Lions in just a matter of weeks.
Hey, Nicholas, how are you? Congratulations.
Good. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Yeah, what a morning, huh?
Yeah, it was a great morning. Yeah.
I know that you've been kind of talking to a lot of people, and you're going to continue to talk to us, but I'm going to ask you what everybody else is. What was it all like? And how exactly did you find out? I know Saquon Barkley was involved.
Yeah, him, Saquon, man, I always looked up to him. For him to tell me that I won National Player of the Year award, it felt great. I didn't know, because I thought me celebrating the Player of the Year award for Pennsylvania, not national. So for him to tell me that I won National Player of the Year award, it just felt good, especially with my parents being there, my coaches, my teammates all cheering me on. So it just felt great.
How did Saquon go about, you know, surprising you, and what were the words that he shared with you?
Yeah, he told me, like, "Yo, like, you know that you won National Player Award." I just shocked me. I was like, "Wait, hold on, what'd you say?" Like, for him to tell me that, it felt great. And just told me, just to keep working. This is just the beginning. Just good luck for me at Penn State. If I need anything, go just let him know.
Nicholas, what do you remember about number 26 in that Penn State uniform when you were a younger guy? And what was that part of your early inspiration at the running back position?
Just see him, because I watched him play against Michigan, how he ran that big run across the field. So for him, I'm just seeing him play. He's obviously a good player. It just makes a good impact for me picking Penn State, because the running backs they produce, like him, Miles Sanders, Journey Brown, Noah Kane, like all them type of backs. And just really good.
How big a part of that conversation was it with Coach Sider and with Coach Franklin and really everybody at Penn State about the track record of Pennsylvania running backs who had chances to go elsewhere, went to Penn State, and it worked out well for them?
They've been just telling me, like, all the running backs they produce, especially for in-state players. You know, Saquon, Miles, Journey, like, they're in-state players. So for them to always stay home, make the running room like RBU, so it just feels good. As just trying to be in that place.
You jumped up to number one in our running back rankings at 24/7 Sports this season. You put together a fantastic senior year. What was different about you as a senior in 2021 versus what we saw earlier in your high school career?
I'll probably say a little bit of my speed. They wanted to see more explosion. You saw a little more explosion. I'm really going through people, because I would usually just run around people because it's just my speed. But if I had to, I would just literally you'll probably see more different. Like, I'll just go through people, chucking people. Saw more catching a little bit, so that's probably it.
What did your presence on the field do for your team? I have to imagine you drew a big crowd on the defensive side of the football. Didn't really matter, though. You still put up the numbers, but what did it do for the rest of the offense, and how much attention did you actually receive on a weekly basis?
Yeah, because everybody know how obviously how good I am. So they basically keep playing me to stop me, especially we have a lot of good players like Eden Johnson, Trey Rock, Aiden Gallen that can just run the ball. Just to spread the ball a little bit, just so they can, you know, stop the other players too besides me. So it takes the tension off them. But then when they start noticing what we're doing, it takes the tension off of me, so we can rotate anything. It's not just giving me the ball. You know what I mean?
I know. Penn State didn't run the ball as well as they wanted to this year. Coach Sider has said that a few times. What makes you excited, optimistic about a bounce back year for the running game in 2022?
He's just been telling me, come work, take this spot because he knows I have a lot of speed. The running backs are good, but he's saying like the speed's a little bit not there. You know what I mean? So he's been telling me just to keep working, get this playbook down. I can play a little bit early.
Where are you expecting your 40-yard dash to be in range-wise when you get on campus for that first testing?
Probably like in the 4.4s, I'm hoping. I believe so.
And Catron Allen is coming in as well as another talented running back. Do you two have any kind of a relationship yet? And when you watch his game, what stands out to you?
We have it. I met him at the Auburn whiteout game, but we haven't really talked because we had it during the season. So he took his time with the team. I took myself to the team. But I seen him. He's just really – he'd be bulldozing people. He got a little bit of good speed. I just been seeing him just really chugging people, scoring. He's obviously a great player. So me and him on the backfield, it's going to be really good.
And then what do you think about the competition in that backfield? You mentioned Noah. He's just one of the several guys who looks like they're going to be back and competing. What stands out to you about that room?
It's a great room. I have a good relationship with all the players. They're really helpful for me, telling me what to do when I get up here. I know they're going to be helping me get the classes, push me in the weight room, especially helping with the playbook. It'll be really competitive, but I'm really up to it.
What did you think about getting Sean Clifford back for another year, playing a sixth year, being the fourth-year starter, looks like in 2022? What was your reaction to the news?
Yeah, him, like, he's obviously a good player. Getting him back, it's good because he can literally do it all. He knows the playbook more. I'd probably looking up to him more, him helping me with stuff. So for him to come back would be good.
And we had Drew on for a conversation last week, and he had a lot of good things to say about you, Drew Aller. Mm-hmm. What would you like to say about Drew and number one quarterback in our rankings? You're the number one running back. What could that pair do at Penn State?
Yeah, we've been hearing on social media. He's obviously a great, great, great quarterback. He can do anything, run it, throw the rock. So for him to be out there, going to Penn State, it'll be a great duo in a couple of years. We'll be looking forward to it.
And I do have to ask about fellow Pennsylvania guy here, Bo Prabula, because I know he was recruiting you hard. What does it say about his character? I mean, everyone's focused on Drew, and he's going to be there. He's going to be competing in a month. What do you think about Bo as a competitor and as a potential quarterback for Penn State?
Yeah, Bo's good. I see him playing at Central York. I saw a little bit when he had the links to the games. I see him, he just throws the ball like it's literally nothing. Be right on the spot. So for him to be part of Penn State family too will be good because Drew and him will always compete. Pussy Cheddar will make the team better. So I'm looking forward to it.
And my last question for you, Nick, thanks again for the time. When you look ahead with your class here, getting to campus, making an impact, what's your message to Penn State fans out there who are wondering what's this class all about? What do you think this class is all about?
This class is going to be really good in a couple of years, especially next year, too, because we'll have a lot of players that are coming in, stepping up big time. So a couple of years, just wait for us. We're going to be going for a Big Ten championship, especially for a national championship, too.
Hey, well, congratulations again on the Player of the Year honor. Have a great time with your signing day ceremony, and we'll see you on campus real soon, okay?
All right. Thank you.
Thanks again to Nick, and also thanks to the good folks at Gatorade for helping us set that one up. We weren't even aware that was going to be a possibility until very shortly before you heard that interview. So, Sean, obviously everyone around here is excited to see Nick Singleton come on board. You got Catron Allen, been a lot of talk about that. When we go back to Bull Media Day, though, it's about some of the guys who are leaving, and that's kind of where the conversation is. It is an open-ended conversation right now, less than 2 weeks away from the bowl game. But we know that linebacker Brandon Smith, a year 3 player with Penn State, eligibility on the table for 2022 and 2023. He's done in an Nittany Lions uniform. He's not going to be playing in the Outback Bowl. He's going to be preparing for the 2022 NFL draft. A couple of years as a starter with the Nittany Lions, two different linebacker positions, the guy that we were hoping we may be able to see his trajectory move forward here at Penn State. He is a mystery to me. I mean, even if he goes out there and athletically piles up impressive numbers, and I assume he will, you turn on the game tape, and there's a pretty significant amount of that now in his Penn State career. I think there's some questions about whether this was the right time, and good for him and good for his family if this was the good move for them. But I have to say I'm a bit surprised considering how the season went for Brandon Smith. We did not see him ascend as like that all Big Ten kind of talent as the game wrecker that Penn State really needed. But maybe we would have seen it next year. And as we've seen, some guys move on to the NFL and they just keep moving forward and they play a little bit better, even then they continue to blossom. But that will not happen here in State College.
Yeah, unfortunately for Penn State fans, I think it's going to be the case. I think Brandon Smith's going to be a better pro than he was college player. And we just never saw him take that next step. And it's frustrating to watch, from a fundamental standpoint in terms of squaring up and breaking down those things. I think with his size, that'll translate better to the next level. With his athleticism, he'll be able to be there. I'll be interested to see if somebody uses him as an edge rusher. There were several schools that recruited him as a defensive end originally. That's one of the reasons, he really liked Penn State because they let him stick at linebacker. That's just the production never matched the potential. And that's really unfortunate to say. And I say that as a fan of Brandon Smith. I think he's probably somewhere in between where Penn State fans view him and where he was on the game film. I think he was rephrase that. He's somewhere between where Penn State fans see him and NFL scouts are going to see him. So unfortunate that it never really took that next step, just all the physical talent in the world. It was unfortunate to not see the fundamentals come through and really be the player that we thought he could be coming into the process. So I say the same thing I said about Away last year. He's going to go higher than you think he should, and he's probably going to be better than you think he should. But all the best to Brandon. He's always been good to us, no doubt.
I agree with you. The thing that wraps, hard to wrap your head around with Brandon Smith, the way he came in as the number one rated linebacker in the country by 24/7 Sports, and a guy that you look at, played a ton of games, started a bunch of games for Penn State. Hard to find those memorable moments from when they say, hey, what are the moments you remember from Brandon Smith's career? I'm like, I remember when he sent CJ Thorpe to his knees and it went viral, and that was an awesome hit as a freshman. But you think about his time as a starter, there were a lot of plays, chasing guys downfield. We talked about it, some pinball moments that were really poorly timed where just not wrapping up and all of a sudden the guy's getting downfield and it's backbreaking gains. But, very clearly there were some splash plays made by Brandon Smith over the course of Big Ten football. But I can't really conjure up the highlight reel in my head. And when you ask me to do that for other guys who have come through here, like a Micah Parsons, who we've seen, and you just think, I think Micah Parsons, and the more we see of some of these linebackers at Penn State, I mean, we're seeing at the NFL level, how spoiled were we seeing the infantile stages of what Micah Parsons was as a linebacker here at Penn State, because we've seen Brandon Smith come through. We saw Lance Dixon roll through as a five-star prospect. Curtis Jacobs came in as a five-star prospect, and you hope there's growth for him coming in to his third year. But it ain't easy to go from five-star prospect to game wrecker on a Big Ten defense. Maybe Micah made it look easy, but no one has been able to come in and make it such a seamless transition. And I guess it may not matter to NFL scouts. They just want to pick you up on the upswing. That's what matters to them. But I think ultimately it's going to hurt Brandon Smith, whereas if he had delivered this year and been that kind of a game wrecker, we're probably talking about a first-round level talent here at linebacker. I'm going to be really curious on how NFL scouts, how the folks who parse through this all between now and April – marry the game film and the body of physical talent and the specimen that is Brandon Smith and the guy that's going to be, do just fine in meetings. He's really impressive young man to sit down and speak with, comes from a great family, but how does that all marry up with what we saw from him as 2 years of a starter at Penn State? Feels like a little bit, certainly left on the table here in his Nittany Lions career, but that's not the first time this has happened where a guy has come in to Penn State, left earlier than people thought, and to your point, gone on and continued improving at the next level. But Brandon Smith's got his work cut out for him, and I think in terms of benefit of the doubt, a lot of people here in Happy Valley are not going to be quick to give it to him when projecting him as a professional player.
Well, the expectations certainly change the perception of players, and there's the, you know, the perception that he did not maximize his talent while at Penn State is something that it's not just a Brandon Smith thing. We saw it last year with Away. We've even seen it with Parsons, that people are salty about the way that his career went, that he never, you know, topped out or anything like that. So I think it's just natural, and it's not just a Penn State thing either. This is something across the country. Those guys that stick it out and play and use all their eligibility and do everything, even if they're not at the level of the guys that leave early, have a different place in people's heart than the guys that seemingly skip out. I mean, there's still people, you know, talking about Jesse James leaving a year early. You know, that's kind of just how things go in college football fandom. But yeah, I agree with you. I think that the expectation of him coming in as a five-star, I don't think, you know, and this is not something new for Penn State in the last decade or so, hasn't lived up to that. But I do think that he'll be a guy that NFL scouts look at. It's funny, and I say this all the time, football people love Brandon Smith. Football people love guys like that, and think, and NFL coaches and coaching staffs think that they're the people that this player needs to develop into the best form of themselves. And I think you're going to see that a lot with Brandon Smith. There's going to be a ton of interest in terms of a guy that's nearly 6'5", that moves like he does, can finish plays like he does. It's just a matter of this was a guy that did not finish enough plays at Penn State.
We wish Brandon well on what comes next for him. We're focused, though, on the Outback Bowl, and we're not sure what else is going to happen between now and kickoff, because the name that we've all been fixated on is Jahan Dotson, of course, and you talk about a projectable first-round talent out of Penn State this year. Jahan Dotson is the name at the forefront. Jaquan Brisker, probably the next man up in terms of an NFL prospect. And those are the two that we've talked about a lot, but Brandon Smith has been discussed for a while about a potential opt-out scenario. Sean, you were at practice. If people are watching on YouTube, I'm at my family's house in New Jersey this week, and then we're moving up to my in-laws in Connecticut. We're all over the place, but you were there on the ground, and it was light on the numbers. And you know, reading between the lines with a bowl ahead and opt-outs happening all across the country, this may be a bit of a skeleton crew, and certainly a young crew that takes on the Razorbacks in just about, 12 days, trying to do math here in a lifetime.
Yeah, you were not not the only familiar face that was not present in Huluba the other day. It was a skeleton crew, as you would say. I mean, just big time names not there, and it's not surprising in bowl season. That's kind of the way that this has gone, and that's an argument for another podcast, because we don't really need to do that. But no Jahan Dotson, no Jaquan Brisker, Arnold Ebikidi, a couple of Ellis Brooks. I mean, there's a number of guys not on hand on Friday at practice, waiting for those official announcements from some of those guys, but you know, some guys that we already know are not going to play. But it's disappointing, but at the same time, there's opportunity in that. And that's something we try to focus on in terms of our notes the other day. How do you go in and say, you know, no Jahan Dotson, but you've got Parker Washington, you've got Keandre Lambert Smith, who's going to step up behind him? Are you going to see more 12 personnel with Brenton Strange and Theo Johnson and Tyler Warren as well, which I probably think that's the way Penn State has to go. No Rasheed Walker. So Olu Fashanu may be getting his shot at left tackle. So there's so much opportunity there. And if you look at this bowl trip, it's more, and you have it written down here in the lineup, and I didn't even see it until now. But it's more about jumping into 2022 than it is closing out 2021. And that's unfortunate, because if you lose this game to Arkansas, which also has a couple of opt-outs, on their end as well, probably won't have as many. It's about finishing, but giving yourself that launch pad into 2022. And, you know, you're probably going to see some younger players because of it.
Treylon Burks, the big one that's out on Arkansas's end, he announced really early on after this matchup went public. And of course, him, Dotson, viewed as two of the premier prospects at their position in the upcoming NFL draft. Haven't heard anything official. That could change by the time you even listen to this podcast on anyone except for Brandon Smith. But we're ready, and we're going to scramble, and we'll be ready to adjust our expectations for the matchup. But the conversation, of course, becomes, you know, is this trying to punctuate your 2021 on a high note? Or is it, hey, what can we do for that 2022 mission? As you just alluded to, Sean, and it makes you wonder here over the next week and a half of practice, what they're doing right now in Happy Valley this week, what they're going to do next week down on the west coast of Florida. How much is it about positioning yourself to take off for launch in spring ball versus trying to get to that eighth win? And let's face it, I don't know what Arkansas is going to look like with Treylon Brooks. Let's start there. He was felt like 80% of their offensive attack when you go through the numbers. I know they got the ground game, but they're in scramble mode too. And you just hear reading between the lines and talking to some of these people involved in the decisions, Penn State's not even sure what kind of hand they're going to be playing with quite yet in the game. And when you're talking about shuffling some things from a staff perspective, you've been recruiting all these in-home visits. You've been searching for a defensive coordinator. A little bit of a reminder that the bowl game is on the back burner until maybe a week and a half before the bowl game.
Yeah, that's kind of how they treat these things. And it's funny because you were talking, or we were talking to players, and a couple of them were asked, would you rather have a month to prepare for somebody or just a week like in a game? And a lot of them were like, to be honest with you, that's a lot to think about in a month. So you can jam it into a week, and that works too. We'll see what happens from a coaching point of view. Of course, Manny Diaz hired earlier this month, but he's just going to be basically an observer. And that's the way it is for most guys that get hired in coordinator spots. Anthony Poindexter is going to call the defense. Joe Lorig is going to coach the linebackers. So you won't miss a ton. Joe Lorig, of course, the outside linebackers coach, has worked with them all year. So even without Brent Pry there, who's spearheaded the drills throughout the season, you still have a familiarity with Lorig, and they're going to need it because they're going to miss a couple of linebackers there. So we'll see what happens with that. But yeah, it's about getting your guys going for 2022. I would think you've got if Brisker's not there, you've got to keep Nellis back there, maybe Jalen Reed playing some, trying to figure out where they can, you know, just get the most out of their experience without really exposing these guys and putting them in a bad position. I don't see how they're going to get around it at some of those spots. Defensive end still going to be really thin. If you don't have Ebikidi, you've got Smith Vilbert starting, which is no disrespect there, but that's a long drop off right there from Ebikidi to Smith Vilbert. You move around Ellis Brooks. That means you're moving around Jesse Luketa. It's just so many moving parts here, and it's tough to, for guys like Luketa, the seniors that are on their way out, it's tough to I don't want to say mail it in for them to put yourself in a position to work those young guys through there. But at the same time, I think they understand the situation as well.
And by the way, Luketa, someone that I was able to catch up with a bit on the virtual bowl media day Friday, he's in for the bowl game. And as Sean just referenced, not one of those names missing from practice. 2022, non-committal right now. That decision will come after the bowl game. And then you were on the call with Jair Brown, who just saw his teammate kind of have to make a decision last winter. Paid off in a big way, had an All-American campaign to Jaquan Brisker. And Jair Brown, man, what a boost he would be if he decides to follow the same path as Brisker.
Yeah, and I think we've been saying this for a while. I expect Jair Brown back, but it's a matter of making a decision. And to be honest with you, I mean, Poindexter was on the fence there about Virginia, and you had potential changes for his position coach. You got a new defensive coordinator, so you got to feel those out, and you kind of owe it to yourself to take as much time as you need. But I expect Brown to be back in that secondary, and they're going to need him, and I think he can really benefit from it as well. Talk to him a little bit about what Brisker went through in the last year, where Brisker went from a mid-round guy, potentially a second round guy right now. So you've that's a big jump, and that's a lot of dollar signs in front of you to make that jump from the fourth or fifth round to the second round. So I think he can make a jump. I don't think he's going to wow NFL scouts as much as Brisker did, even though he did have the takeaway numbers. I think Brisker is the better all-around athlete. He's got the better size and things to work with there. But he can still really benefit from coming back to school for another year. And I think he'll end up doing that.
In an offensive tackle, though, Rasheed Walker has kind of been out of the lineup here for what feels like a while, missing the last few games of the season. But Olu Fashanu was also out of sight, out of mind, not in the practice field when we saw them, not out in uniform for some of those games toward the tail end of the regular season. So you talked about him maybe being involved. How much does Bryce Effner factor in? We saw him at tackle quite a bit late in the regular season. And then Landon Tengwall, things began to open up for him the last two games. Mike Miranda, Juice Scruggs, you've got one, you're expecting back next year. Is he your center next year, Juice Scruggs? How does this all play into what Phil Troutwine does in finding the five that he rolls out there with the first team unit? Maybe some of the other guys he may work in against Arkansas, which, that's to me one of the more fascinating things, because if there's any offensive line, if there's any position that needs a strong finish / momentum carried into 2022, it's that offensive front. So I want to see how they mix match some of the younger guys, and if you can find some young emerging tackles here in the next few weeks and solidify maybe some depth there in 2022, that to me is up there with just about as much as you want to accomplish from a personnel standpoint for Penn State. And reinforcements need to come in the offseason, but really got to figure out what you have on this roster, where they can play football that's going to maximize their skill set.
Yeah, I mean, the offensive line, and we've gotten, you know, far enough away from the season where you kind of get a little bit of hope up and think that you maybe could run for, you know, have more success on the ground or whatever. They were so bad that it's tough to have any optimism about that. So you're trying to figure out how many band-aids you could put on that just to get you to that finish line so you can get a fresh start in spring ball. So we saw Scruggs at center. So maybe that's a little bit of both in terms of getting your best five out there, but at the same time, setting yourself up for the future. Fashanu, I talked about before. So I don't know how it's going to work. They got to just get across the finish line as an offensive line and try and start fresh in the spring. I do think Tengwall can be a guy that can come in and help them. You know, Anthony Wiggin was, I thought, serviceable at the end of the season when those guys were sick. You know, hopefully for their sake, the experience and the mixing and matching they did at the end of the season can benefit them in the future, because the expectations are pretty well close to zero right now for the offensive line. So you just don't want to dip below that if you're Penn State.
And by the way, offensively, we did hear from Mike Yurcich, very candid conversation. I think Mark Brennan has a story up on Lines 24/7 about that one. But speaking on Bull Media Day, which was the first time we got Yurcich since late September, I think it was, he took complete ownership of this. If people were looking for some ownership here about how the offense went in year one, he took that on. He also said he planned on getting better, or he would die trying, which is something we heard Jim Harbaugh say.
Isn't it?
Yeah. Worked out well for Harbaugh. I mean, we heard it in July in Chicago, and all of a sudden he was in the Big Ten title. But the quote here, not good enough, a lot of room to improve. We didn't execute at the level that we needed to execute at. I take the blame. It solely falls on my shoulders. We'll get better. I'll get better. No one thrown under the bus there by Mike Yurcich. And by the way, really interesting the way he talked about having Sean Clifford back on board. He said he didn't want to have to sell Sean. He didn't want to have to recruit Sean. He wanted Sean to want to be in the room and want to help coach up these young quarterbacks. And they crossed that all off their list during conversations. And it sounds like they've got a really good plan ahead. So we talked about the health of the quarterback room looking good. Mike Yurcich, Sean Clifford remain at the crux of that for another year, but a lot in place right now where they are building toward the future, and Yurcich knows he needs a rebound season if Penn State is going to bounce back.
And we prefer him not to die. I know we don't even like firing guys on this podcast, so we're not trying to kill Mike Yurcich. But yeah, good to see him take the responsibility for it. Now it's about changing it, and there's really not much you can say beyond that.
Let's get to our five-star mailbag to wrap up this episode of the Lions 24/7 podcast. And it takes us back to this signing class. So many of Penn State's 2022 signees committed in a short span during the summer, and it was difficult to keep track with one after the other. Do you think anyone who came on from that time was maybe overlooked as a result? And Sean, we can confirm this. It felt like every single day in July, it was either we were writing and talking about a commitment, or we were preparing to do it the next day.
Yeah, I think by the time they got to the end of July, there was so much commitment fatigue. And that, you know, that's a real thing, because people were, I don't want to say clicking on things less, but, you know, they'd just be like, oh, great, another guy is on board. It was so active. I've never seen anything like it. But that's kind of how we drew it up, and it's exactly how it came to fruition. But so by the time they got to, I think it was the 31st Lash Bash weekend, you got commitments on the same day from KJ Winston, and then I think later that night was Abdul Carter. And probably did not receive the fanfare that they should have, just in terms of these guys are really, really good. I mean, these guys, top half of the class, maybe the rankings don't say it, but top half of the class in terms of potential. So I think those two, and I've harped on KJ Winston every chance I've gotten throughout this cycle since the winter last year. Just a really good player. And then Carter, you know, has some work to do in terms of learning to play the game, but in terms of physical freaks and guys that could really turn that physical prowess into a really productive career, whether it be an edge rusher, whether it be a big linebacker, those two guys, I think you're going to look back in a couple of years and say that these guys, that was a big day for Penn State football.
I'm going to go back to the 4th of July, because not only did you have your family and fireworks to contend with, but you had a couple other commitments. You remember the short-lived commitment of Tyrese Fearbury out of Pittsburgh. That was part of the 4th of July hoopla. But Zane Durant came on board on the 4th of July, Sean. And to me, every time you turn the tape on with this kid, you hear about him from people. Andrew Ivins, just about a week and a half ago on this podcast down in Florida, has had a long look at Zane Durant, discussing what he has seen from him. And then you just look at the production from recent years. I love that he gets involved on offense, playing a little bit of running back down there, but he is in the backfield on defense so much. 28 tackles for loss, 15 sacks as a senior. And I see maybe some Kevin Givens here. I think he has more of probably a higher athletic and prospect profile. But coming into Penn State, where does he fit in on the defensive front? Can he do a few things for you? Is it going to be on the edge early and inside later? Are you going to need him to do a little bit of both? Because that's what depth requires over the course of his career. I think him coming in early, to me, really it makes Zane Durant a guy I'm circling. Not just is he overlooked for who came in, but you know, who's going to be able to come in as a freshman? Tall task for any freshman defensive tackle. We've seen a lot of defensive tackles not surface until year three or four at Penn State. But I really like what Zane Durant's bringing to that room. And I'm not going to count him out to come in and maybe contend for a little action as autumn goes on in 2022.
Yeah, I mean, I think with Zane Durant, the question is, how big is he going to come in? I mean, he's anywhere from 230 to 250, as you would say that, which is, you know, a little bit undersized for a defensive tackle. I don't mind it at all, because you've got, you've got a situation where he can build himself up in the right weight, keep that twitch and keep going with that. But I think that's the question is he going to be big enough, or are you going to use him as the five tech, as they did with Kevin Givens, play him an end a little bit? And if you do that, is he ready to do that? I'm not sure that he's quite there yet, but it was just an impressive, an impressive month, because you don't even think about, besides the guys that they got, they kept a bunch after those official visits. You remember Drew Shelton was visiting other spots this year. Probably another guy you could add to this mix is Keon Wiley, who, you know, kind of gets forgotten here and there. But what a month. Cam Miller, you could throw in there.
Al Furchmeyer committed, by the way, the number one offensive lineman in 24/7's rankings. He got snuck into the 2023 class midway through July as well. So it was quite the few weeks there, man.
Yeah, it was exhausting, and it was great for Penn State, because you come off of the not being able to host anybody, and all of a sudden, you know, we talked for so long about the potential for late June into early July, and then July is just you ride a commitment wave, just wondering who's going to be next, and that's fun. I mean, it's no doubt about it. It's fun, especially if you're a fan following the stuff. But it was something Penn State really definitely could have used going into the season to get themselves back onto that national spotlight. And you remember, they had the number one class in the country at that point, so it was a pretty cool time. But I can definitely see some of these guys, and you go down the commitment list, and it's tough to remember three commitments in a day or two commitments in a day, I think they're gonna get some real players out of that month.
Solid question, one that clearly resonated with us from the five-star mailbag. Throw yours in up at Apple Podcasts. We look forward to getting to those as the offseason commences. A lot happening right now at lines247.com. The transfer portal is in full rotation. Coaching carousel could still continue to impact this Penn State staff. And, of course, the 2023 recruiting class now front and center with his commitment from Joshua Miller. Sean, you and I starting to peer a little bit ahead at the weather forecast for Tampa, Florida. We will have any news that comes up between now and next week on the Outback Bowl.
I haven't looked yet.
Oh, you're resisting.
I've done that in the past, and it's just been nothing but a letdown. So I'm holding off on that. I it's nice enough. I've got Clearwater Beach in my phone year round. So I'm just going to hold off on that for now.
Yeah. So again, we're not sure exactly what kind of team Penn State is bringing down, but as things break and give us some clarity on that, lines247.com is going to be your destination. Go check it out. 24/7 for Lance Glynn, for our producer, for co-host Sean Fitz. I'm Tyler Donahue, coming to you from New Jersey this time around. We're back with another episode later in this week. Talk to you real soon on the Lions 24/7 podcast.
On May 23rd.
I want to go back to normal.
What's normal?
The Paramount Plus original series, Evil Returns.
We've already hunted werewolves and demons.
And now what? A baby antichrist?
Okie dokie.
Prepare yourself.
You will not beat us.
For the end.
I have visions of hell.
Make it stop. Make it shut up.
You're not gonna survive this.
Evil, the final season. Streaming May 23rd. Only on Paramount Plus.